Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast. UK, UK Tech Weekly Podcast. UK Tech Podcast. UK Tech Podcast. UK Tech Weekly Podcast. Hello and welcome to the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, an infotainment cardigan knitted by the tricoteurs editors of PC Advisor, Tech World, Macworld UK and Computer World UK. I am David Price, Deputy Editor of Macworld UK, and today I am delighted to be joined in talk by, has someone been farting? It's Chris Martin, Consumer Tech Editor on PC Advisor.
I salute you.
Nice. What a rich smell. It's Cameron Mitchell, Editorial Intern on Macworld.
Please don't say that ever again.
It's good though. It's a double syllable rhyme.
I'm proud of that. I appreciate that.
And finally, give it a rest, son. It's Dominic Preston, staff writer on PC Advisor and Macworld.
I'm glad I wasn't part of the general fart theme of that.
Well, I thought, thanks. Well, you're sort of saying give it a rest from the farting, maybe. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah.
This week we are talking phones, politics, and nude bodysuits. Uh-oh, SpaghettiO! Chris Martin is looking tired and emotional, and for once it's not because of the drink. What did you what did you get up to last night, Chris, and why should our listeners care?
Well, Samsung has finally launched the Galaxy S8 and the Galaxy S8 Plus, so these are, you know, the new flagship phones from Samsung that everyone's been waiting for, because we didn't get them at MWC in Barcelona.
Were they expected at MWC?
That is normally what they do. So they normally announce them on the Sunday night at MWC before the show starts on Monday. And this year we just got a lot of tablets, which is fine.
Was that because of your hangover? Tablets.
That's a good joke, yes.
I'm having some great jokes so far.
So
it comes out. Do they have a regular schedule like Apple do it every September? They have a new iPhone. Are they as regular?
It's varied a little bit, but the last few years have all been MWC Sunday night launches for like at least the last two or three. But they've waited a little bit longer this time. We're not really sure why, but.
And they're giving themselves their own event.
Yeah.
They're getting all the press. Yeah.
Partly that makes sense because obviously at MWC, all their rivals are launching phones like the LG G6 and the Huawei P10. So, you know, you've got to fight for people's attention. Not that they would struggle, but whether it's just that or whether it's something else, we don't know. But they're here anyway and they're gorgeous.
They're gorgeous. That's the verdict.
Pretty much.
I think... is it true that you and Dominic have both had your hands on the new phones?
Yeah, so Dom went to the actual launch event yesterday.
Yeah.
As we record. I was still back here at the office writing up all the coverage. So Dom and Henry went down there. So what was it like, Dom?
It was a bit of a strange event because they had a sort of simultaneous New York and London events.
Yeah.
And New York was obviously the main one. And so London was this sort of weird mix where sometimes we were just watching a live stream from the New York event, and then at other times someone would come on stage in London to talk to us. So it was weird sort of darting back and forth between someone actually being there and us just sitting there and watching a screen.
It's better than we normally get, isn't it?
Yeah,
sometimes it's just an American event. Screen.
And there was, you know, some fun, awkward touches, like, MC
that.
Coming on at the beginning, asking all of the awkward London journos to go, do a big wave and hello to the New York crowd. And then DJ Ko, who's head of Samsung in New York, sort of when he welcomed the London crowd, saying he wished he could have a pint of London Pride after the show.
Wow, shout out to Fuller's.
I know, right? They did all right.
Yeah. And this is a bit odd to me, because Samsung obviously are not an American or a British company. They are South Korean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So why would they have the launch in the US and Europe and not in Asia?
They've often done a three-way launch.
Steady.
In New York, London, and somewhere in the east.
I'm dredging up my geographical
knowledge. But this was just the two, which is a bit strange. Yeah. I know it's hard to make all those three launches at reasonable hours of the day across the world.
That's basically impossible, isn't it?
But it does happen.
Quite a lot of this event was, is it fair to say, known about in advance? There were leaks doing the round.
Like, most phones get leaked in pretty good detail, but this was
exhaustive.
This was it's like
we knew absolutely everything.
Even a few weeks ago, the amount of leaks covered pretty much everything.
Yeah,
so it was like,
I mean, it got to the point in the days running up to the launch where people were leaking just pictures of the cases,
because
they'd leaked literally every fact they could about the phone, photos of the phone from every angle. So the only news left was, here are some of the cases you might be able to buy for it.
The only thing that was a little bit off was the leaked prices, I think. Not that we didn't get any leaked UK prices, but going by the other prices, we thought they were going to be a bit higher than they are.
Did the leaks get the US, for example, prices wrong?
I'm not sure. I haven't actually seen those prices, but based on those ones, it's not as much. So the S8 is 689. And the S8 Plus is 779.
Let me just have a look. So it's actually more expensive than the equivalent iPhone. I mean, I know they're bigger than the iPhones, but the iPhone 7 I've got here starts at 599, and the iPhone 7 Plus starts at 719.
So it's 60 to 90 quid
more expensive than the equivalent iPhone.
Yeah. But that's last year's model. And
that's a 6 month old model. Yeah.
You know, we're in a kind of new era of post-Brexit referendum price hikes, so it kind of all makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, well, those iPhone prices do include the price hike, but
they do. They do indeed. But
they are very expensive already.
It's difficult because the Galaxy flagship comes halfway between iPhones.
Mm. So it's an odd one, yeah.
It's kind of, you have to compare it to the current iPhone for a while and then the next one, but it doesn't completely work both ways.
Sorry, what feature excites you most?
I mean, the screen is the biggest new thing, basically, because there are, like, I can understand that some people are a little bit disappointed that some things about the phone are the same as the S7. So the battery is still 3,000 mAh, the camera is still the same. But I'm not too fussed about those things.
I mean, in terms of actual battery life, you would hope that even with the same capacity, it would achieve a better battery life.
It should do, because we've got new, more efficient processors. So, I mean, obviously we haven't tested out battery life, but we will soon.
Although with the larger screen, that will presumably be a drain.
Yeah.
Potentially, so still...
well, should we talk about the screens in a bit more detail? How big are we talking about?
So the normal model is now 5.8 inches, which is a huge jump from 5.1. But the phone itself isn't much bigger at all. So I took my S7 to the pre-brief and held them next to each other. And the S8 is basically just a little bit taller. And we're only talking like maybe 9 or 10 mil taller. But it's basically the same width, same thickness. I think roughly the same weight as well.
That's incredible.
Because there's basically just no bezels. It's just like... It's
pretty much edge.
There's a really thin bit at the top and a really thin bit at the bottom. And like the LG G6, the corners of the screen are rounded, which is just really nice. I don't know why that hasn't been a thing for ages.
No one really thought of it. And then you see it and you go, oh, wow, that makes sense. It looks really good.
Because it kind of matches the curve of the metal frame and just looks really nice.
Oh, see, so the actual... The actual
corners of the display,
I was thinking you meant it would curve over the edges, but...
No.
So it's like an app.
It does that as well, but
That's pretty good. So actually, and again, to make the comparison with Apple, the iPhone 7 and 7 Plus are 4.7 and 5.5 inches. So we are... It's not even a comparison, is it? That's hugely bigger.
Yeah.
Is it comfortable to use? I mean, you said that the body is comparable in size to the previous model, but covering all that screen space with your thumb, can you reach enough, do you think?
I found it fine for the normal model. Obviously, the bigger one, so the Plus model is 6.2.
That's basically a tablet,
isn't it? Normally, once we'd get to 6 or over, we just, you know, find phones generally in the office too big.
Mm.
But again, because of the no bezels, it still doesn't feel that big.
Mm.
It's not as wide in the hand as you, because it goes right to the edges. Yeah. You're not sort of stretching your hand out just to hold it comfortably.
And they've done various things to make it easier to use with one hand. So the camera app has loads of gestures, so you can zoom and switch between the cameras and stuff like that with one hand. There's a new multi-window feature called Snap Window, which means you can snap like a letterbox portion of any app, or maybe not any app, but certain apps to the top of the screen and then carry on using the bottom half. Like normal, so like multitasking, stuff like that.
Tell me about Bixby.
Bixby. Mm. So one last thing on the screen is just that both models now have the edge display, so you don't need to get the bigger one for that.
Okay.
Bixby is Samsung's virtual assistant type deal, so kind of rival to Siri or Google Assistant. Comes preloaded on the phone, even has its own dedicated button on the side, so you can launch it whenever you need to.
Is that locked to Bixby? As far as
we know, it will only launch Bixby.
That is quite a step, actually, isn't it?
Yeah.
The number of hardware buttons we're seeing on phones now is going down and down and down. And to have one devoted to a single feature that people might not like seems ambitious.
I may be wrong. You may be able to customize it, but I don't know at this moment in time. So,
is it significantly different to Google Assistant?
Not massively.
So it answers your questions and it tries to predict what you're going to do. And
the whole point from Samsung's perspective is that you can talk to it and you don't need to know what you can and can't say, and it will know context. So depending on which app you're in, it'll take all those things into account and be able to help you better.
Yeah, so you could say, find me photos of Chris and then send those to Chris, and it'll know that those means the last question.
Yeah, and if you've selected a few, like you could open the gallery app with your voice, you can select a few photos and say, make these photos an album, and it'll know that you mean the ones that you've selected and stuff like that. They showed off a few different things with it, but nothing particularly mind-blowing. And a lot of it you can already do with rivals such as Google.
This does raise a problem potentially that Samsung has, which is because it's an Android-based manufacturer, it's always going to be behind Google, if you see what I mean. Because, Apple makes its own operating system that has its own issues, of course. But Google makes, with a Pixel phone, it makes its own operating system. Samsung is always going to be a little bit of a step behind because it has to make its handsets match an operating system that somebody else makes. And so when you have things like Bixby, Bixby is always a step behind as well because it can't include Google Assistant. Is that something that Samsung can solve? Should they make their own operating system almost? I guess that's impossible at this point.
They've dabbled in their own operating system with Tizen, which they've mostly used for wearables. I think they did launch a Tizen phone a while ago. Like we're talking maybe 2 or 3 years ago. But it's just not something people are interested in. There's not enough space even for, Windows Phone.
Yeah, you saw with Windows Phone.
In the market.
Yeah, they don't want to change it from what they have.
I mean, and the other annoying thing about Bixby for anyone in the UK is that it only launches with Korean language to begin with. Then US English is coming in May, and then we don't even know when UK language is coming. So you can't actually use the voice
that is frustrating.
Part of Bixby. So you'll just have to make do with the home panel, which is a bit like Google Now. Just gives you tons of information that it thinks is useful. And you can also use Bixby Vision, which is basically pointing the camera at different things like landmarks or products and getting
augmented reality.
Yeah, I saw that feature. It looked quite interesting.
It's interesting, but again, it's nothing that new.
Yeah.
And the phone does come with Google Assistant. So
what?
You're going to get everybody buying, everyone getting their S8 or S8 Plus is going to be like, okay, I can't really use Bixby. Yeah. I'll get acquainted with Google Assistant, get used to that. And yeah, then by the time the UK language launches, no one's going to care. So,
there's such an inertia to these things that once you get used to it, you don't want to show it.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Galaxy S9 doesn't come with Bixby.
Why are they calling it Bixby anyway? It's a stupid name, isn't it?
It's an awful name. Mm. I'd feel so embarrassed standing anywhere asking for Bixby to do something. I mean, it's bad enough with Siri, but Bixby, you just can't say it with a straight face. No.
Is there like an Open Sesame type phrase? You have to say, hey Bixby, or hello Bixby, or something?
I don't know, actually. I think the idea is that you push the button, say.
To save you from that. Yeah, maybe they know it's such a
maybe
embarrassing
that's why
name.
The
that's
button's there.
All right, so these phones are going to launch when?
So they're on pre-order now, and you can pre-order up until the 19th of April. And the reason there's a limit is because if you pre-order, you get the phone 8 days early. So you'll get it.
Right.
If you pre-order on the 19th, you'll get it the following day on the 20th, because the then proper release date on sale date is the 28th of April.
So you can't order, pre-order between the 19th and the 28th?
No.
There's like a window. Lovely. That's a bit confusing. There were other products unveiled at the event. We haven't got much time left, but
I can just run through them very quickly.
Yeah, do it.
So there's namely a new Gear 360 camera, which is a little bit downgraded, we discovered once we got the spec sheet. So it does full resolution 4K, so like ever so slightly higher in terms of pixel count, but it only does that in 24 frames per second, not 30. And the actual
what do they think this the is actual 18th century
the actual sensors in the camera are a little bit lower than last time,
but it is smaller and lighter, and it looks like maybe they're planning, if they position it as cheaper, it will make sense.
If it's cheaper, then it makes sense. If it's not, we're a bit confused.
People don't like marketing things as cheaper at the moment, do they? We're in that thing with OnePlus. They don't want to be known as the budget phone people. Yeah.
But then this, I mean, if you look at the, I think that might be what they're doing, because you look at the design, like this is now looks more white and plasticky than the last Gear 360, which looked more metallic.
Very briefly, it's like a solid design now. And the other one was basically a ball that you screwed a tripod to, but with the legs closed, it just kind of, that's where you held it. And I quite liked that. Like just holding it with the legs closed and then using the tripod when you needed it to. But now it's just a fixed thing and it looks a bit strange. So the other main thing, there's a Samsung Connect Home Hub thing that kind of connects all your Internet of Things together, which is fine. And the most interesting thing for me is the DeX, D-E-X little dock, which you plug the Galaxy S8 into, and it gives you a full desktop experience on a monitor, and you can even use it with a wireless keyboard and mouse, just like you would with a Windows thing. So it's kind of like Windows Continuum, but on Android, and it's quite appealing.
That does sound appealing. I wish we had more time to talk about it. We had better stop there. We'll go around the room with a question. Cameron, we always ask a question at the end of each section.
Sure.
In this case, we will say S... great, or S that all? Cameron, what do you think?
Ooh, for me, it's too early to tell. I mean,
no, that's one of the rules of the questions. Is
you have to pick one.
You have to pick one, and they are always ridiculous.
Based on what you know,
S great.
Well, you really love it, do you? Oh, that's interesting. Dominic, what do you think?
Yeah, definitely S great.
And Chris,
S great.
Fantastic. After a short break, we're going to talk about encryption. Cameron, welcome to the pod. First pod for you. Enjoying it so far?
Yeah, no, it's really good fun, actually.
Glad to have you. A lot of politicians have been complaining about encrypted messaging this week.
Sure.
What's up with that?
Well, It's okay. Our brilliant Home Secretary, Amber Rudd.
Is she a brilliant Home Secretary?
Debatable. For another podcast, perhaps. Yes, with the events that happened last week in Westminster, obviously awful events.
Yep.
With the terrorist attack, she went on the Andrew Marr show on Sunday, and she went into detail about how services such as WhatsApp use end-to-end encryption to keep information essentially from the police and the government.
Oh, well, and anyone.
And anyone, yeah. Exactly.
Cannot be intercepted.
Exactly. So she's saying how these companies are now aiding terrorists.
Okay.
And while
terrorists get help from these companies?
Do terrorists use WhatsApp or other messaging services? Probably is the answer. Yes, they probably do. Will it stop? Will you know, ending encryption completely prevent terrorists from using these chat channels? Unlikely. Firstly, just to go into detail about encrypted messaging. So basically, the message is sent on secure channels, and like I said, can't be seen or intercepted by any third party. And although she says that monitoring of these channels would be done legally through the use of warrants and such, people are still saying it's an impossible task.
Impossible to intercept them? Or
An impossible task to completely ban encrypted messaging.
This is the thing, is that you could, even if you persuade WhatsApp to not encrypt its messages, there are other options out there, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. There are hundreds of different applications which use encrypted messaging. So, you know, you've got Viber, Line, Telegram, Kakao, iMessage even uses a form of encryption.
Yes.
Yes, else?
I mean, we could talk about Apple's attitude to privacy.
Yep.
All day. And yeah. Of course, I mean, famously.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
They refused to cooperate with the FBI when they were investigating the San Bernardino shooting.
Of course, yeah. Which actually is useful to know, which was probably the reason why they weren't invited to a meeting today. Sounds funny.
Snub.
Yeah, so...
Actually, I should stress, when I said they didn't cooperate, they did absolutely cooperate. They simply didn't cooperate in one specific way, which was to unlock a phone.
Of course. Disclaimer and all.
Yes.
But yes, Google, Microsoft, Twitter and Facebook, which of course is the parent company of WhatsApp, have all been invited today to discuss fears that encrypted messaging is aiding terrorists. And whether this meeting will actually, you know, push things forward for the government and help to, you know, ban encryption or whatever they're trying to do, is still yet to be seen. But yes, Apple were not invited to this meeting.
That is fascinating.
Which is, I don't know the reason.
There are hundreds of millions of people around the world using iMessage, and they're happy to leave Apple out of this
find that strange, you know, not to take iMessage into consideration, probably arguably the most used after WhatsApp, messaging wise. Do I think it should be banned? No, not at all.
What are the benefits of encryption?
Well, the benefits of encryption start with privacy, essentially. So it's for the average user, it's going to help you know, give you peace of mind when sending private information between friends, family, you know, businesses, your bank. You know, banks use it to encrypt when sending detail or when processing online orders. Sorry, they use encryption. So I honestly, especially nowadays where people's privacy is becoming more and more important, with VPNs becoming very popular as well.
Well, you say it's becoming more and more important, and I think it's becoming more and more of a hot button issue. But the impression I get from a lot of people who go on our sites and so on is that privacy is something people are more and more willing to give up. Is that if you offer people the ability to, you know, download a free product or whatever in return for their personal details, for example, then they will happily give those away to an advertiser. I suppose part of that is that in this country and in the US, we don't associate privacy with personal safety in the way that it would be in other countries.
Yeah.
You know that the one of the co-founders of WhatsApp, Jan Koum, is hails from the Ukraine, where, to say the least, the ability to keep your personal details and your personal communications from governmental monitoring is a more serious matter.
No, of course.
Because we, you know, we'd assume that Amber Rudd, you know, give her the benefit of the doubt that her intentions are honourable, but say that the next government is not honourable, the next government is evil, and then they decide to start intercepting people's messages so that they can keep an eye on.
Well, this is exactly what I was going to say. Is she bringing up the issue for terrorists, for the issue of terrorism, or is she bringing it up to just get, you know, just to be able to monitor these closed channels for other things that they may want to look into or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, whether that be, you know, for third party, you know, selling, you know, advertising or anything like that, you know.
Absolutely.
It's used all the time. So whether they have an alternative motive is yet to be seen. As well as you know, as well as there being these applications, there's also, you know, we go into gaming a little bit. You know, I don't know if you've seen the film Four Lines.
I have. I love Four Lines.
Film Four Lines. Yes. Well, in there they use a website which is sort of, I think, themed about Club Penguin, which unfortunately closed down yesterday. I know, very dear to my heart. But they use an online game in order to chat. And while it's spoof and while it's a joke, it's completely feasible. I know PSN got into the PlayStation Network, got into a little bit of trouble a couple of years ago with the Charlie Hebdo terrorist attacks. It ended up being just a false rumor, but they said that these terrorists had used PSN to chat. And while it is encrypted, it's not 100% fully encrypted, these channels. So it gets a little bit more complicated when you go into that route. But essentially what I'm saying is, you know, you close down WhatsApp, or not close down, but you
force them to change the way they
exactly
work.
You do that for WhatsApp, you've got all these other apps, and you've got all these other, you know, different ways of communicating that to fully crack down and to fully cover the whole scope of the way people communicate and stuff like that. I think it's almost impossible.
Isn't the suggestion, or one suggestion, that they should just help out when they are required to, as in, don't just completely change how you run your service and get rid of encryption, but if the government or agencies like the FBI require information that could help an investigation, then WhatsApp should cooperate, or companies like WhatsApp should cooperate and provide that information.
Sort of unencrypt specific conversations.
Yeah. I believe
which
they
I'm
have
really conflicted about. Because on the one hand, it's like, you know, if that could prevent, you know, an atrocity, then of course they should do it. But then on the other hand, they're kind of going against their, like, policies.
Yeah.
And people, I guess what they're worried about is if they say, yeah, we will help out when you need it, like, they're risking customers leaving to another service.
Well, I'm not sure it's even that, because
no.
I don't think WhatsApp can, because because it's end-to-end encrypted, which means that even the company themselves, there's a public key and a private key for each message, and they have the public key, and the private key is only available to the person at the other end. So, I mean, this is what Apple were claiming with the iPhone, is that they
They couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's because of the secure enclave, which came in after the phone that was specifically used. Then they no longer can at all do it. Mm-hmm. The one that they were talking about that they would that they could have broken in if they'd made a custom version of iOS and then forced installed that onto the device.
Yeah.
But if they'd done that, then that creates a backdoor that other people can use, and inevitably it gets out.
Yeah.
So the general principle is that you make a backdoor to anything, it then becomes generally available.
Yeah, and exploited.
Totally.
Exactly.
Totally.
Tricky.
Yeah. Just out of interest, who around the table uses WhatsApp?
I use WhatsApp, yeah.
I do, but only recently.
Why only recently?
I just never found a need for it before. And then my friends were like organising a get-together, and they were like, you need to come on WhatsApp because that's where we're discussing it.
That's how it always works, isn't it? It's just a social thing.
Yeah, I mean, I use it, but not specifically because it's encrypted. I just use it because that's what my friends and family used to chat to each other with.
My original need for it was way back in the day when I'd want to speak to people who had an iPhone, and I had a BlackBerry at the time. So that was the way of chatting.
It's the classic cross-platform message.
Well, that's it. And the same thing happened when I got a Samsung as well, moving from iMessage. It's just that. Sending messages through data instead of using texts and all that sort of thing, which makes it a lot easier.
Well, this is sort of what I mean about privacy not being such a high priority for people. I think WhatsApp would say that their raison d'etre is extreme privacy, and I think that's why they made it in the first place. Yeah. But I think that is true of only a small niche of their customer base. They've got so big now that most people are using it because it's cross-platform and all their mates are using it. I do wonder, I don't know about if anybody has any thoughts on this, whether being owned by Facebook means they're more or less likely to cooperate with this sort of political pressure. I mean, does Facebook have more to lose?
I don't know,
or
what
is
Zuckerberg's
Facebook
position on this whole thing is?
Yeah.
I think there is a whole, you know, it steps away from, you know, wanting just direct privacy, but it also gives, it's almost the freedom of speech, you know, taking away the freedom of speech because of that fear implement is sort of playing into the hands of the terrorists. And, you know, being a US company, you know, I suspect that they're going to back that, you know, let's not play into the hands of the terrorist card much. So I would.
It takes a lot of courage for a particularly an American company, I think, because the atmosphere over there to publicly come out and say, no, we are not going to do this particular thing that they claim will stop terror. That's a very powerful thing to say.
Yeah, it sounds like they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, but I still think I think they're unlikely to budge on that one.
Yeah, and obviously, even if encryption is entirely outlawed, people will still be able to make little codes of their own, because encryption is, as people have said, just maths.
Yeah.
And you can do your own anyway. But we should stop there, and I could talk about this all day. It's very interesting. But let's go around the room. The question is, WhatsApp or nothing's app? Everything's fine. Let's go around the other way. Chris?
Oh, WhatsApp, should we do about it? I don't know.
What? That wasn't really the option. It's just,
I know.
WhatsApp or
sometimes
nothing's
we
app?
Create
everything's
a third
fine.
One.
All right, fine. Dominic.
WhatsApp.
And Cameron.
WhatsApp.
That's not how I said it, but I'll allow it. After a short break, we'll come back and talk about a film. Dominic Preston, for our last topic of the episode, I'd like you to share your thoughts on a new film that you've seen. Why don't you give us the hard shell? It's been quite a pun.
Yeah,
dense
I'm not sure I really want
this
to now after that.
Just put us out of our misery.
Yeah, Ghost in the Shell is out this week, starring Scarlett Johansson. It's another adaptation of a 1989 Japanese manga, which was most famously adapted in 1995 into an animated film, also called Ghost in the Shell. I mean, that's kind of regarded as one of the best Japanese animated films of all time. It's hugely influential. It's basically, I think the Wachowskis cited it as one of the major influences on The Matrix. This big sort of cyberpunky future where everyone has various different sort of tech implants in them, and the lead character is a sort of full body cyborg, so she's just basically a human mind inside a full robotic body, and she's sort of fighting terrorists, and specifically a sort of hacker who starts hacking into people's cybernetic implants and taking control of people.
Okay.
But it's rubbish. Huh? But it's rubbish.
The new one is rubbish.
Oh. Chris,
the original is great.
No, I'm saying
we're supposed to talk about it. Yeah, you can't just sum it up like that.
No,
I was going to get to is it rubbish. That's one of my later questions.
Sorry, spoiler.
Yeah, fine.
Well, rubbish is maybe a bit strong. It's my reaction to it was meh. It's just there.
Meh is all right.
It's fine.
That's not rubbish. It's not great.
It's got some good bits.
Meh doesn't convince me to go spend money at the cinema and watch it.
If there was a reason to go spend money on it, it would be because it looks absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
And whatever else you can say about the film, it looks gorgeous. And I'm sort of torn because I almost want to say go see it in the cinema because look at it on a big screen. It looks amazing. Yeah. But equally, it's not that great a film. So it feels like a hard thing to really strongly recommend. Mm. But equally, if you wait and watch it on a plane, you're getting absolutely nothing out of it.
Mm.
The only way to get anything out of it is to watch it in a cinema because... So they've imagined this futuristic Japanese city that's sort of huge holograms everywhere, like Blade Runner, but sort of amped up with modern technology.
I've only seen the trailer, so I can't comment on it. But I think that a real test of the sci-fi film is the way that they incorporate and portray sort of commercial interests and the sort of the dirtiness and the selling, the adverts, and they are amazing. You're absolutely right. Those giant sort of skyscraper size holograms moving around.
I mean, it's basically a vision of a city where there are skyscrapers and then at the top of the skyscraper you've got a hologram as tall as the skyscraper again, and there are shots of the city where there's just, you know, dozens and dozens of these different holograms all over the place advertising different products or companies.
Is all the tech like nothing like what we use now, kind of thing? Or because there's a film recently, I can't remember what it was, but I saw loads of tech journalists complaining because it's supposed to be really futuristic, set really far in the future, but their phones were just like the ones we use now.
You do see that sometimes. It's a fun one. The tech is very futuristic. I mean,
what year is it set in? How far in the future are we?
I don't think they actually specify. I think you can sort of guess it's sort of meant to be 100-ish, 100 or 200 years from now. The tech, it's in a slightly funny place because it comes, like I said, the source material was written in the late 80s, early 90s. So at that point, actually wireless wasn't, they didn't envision the future being wireless. And they've kind of kept that aspect of it.
They haven't invented the wireless yet.
Yeah, right. So it is still the case, you know, they have implants, but they actually manually plug themselves into things. So there's, you know, sort of a socket in the back of your neck and you plug into it, which adds to the sort of slightly icky body horror-ness. I mean, it's not a body horror thing, but that kind of like ick of plugging a cable into the back of your neck.
Like in Existence, remember that?
Yeah, right.
That was the one bit of Existence that was good. It was a real nastiness of the technology.
Yeah. So there's that, and because there is sort of grunginess to a lot of it. Well, like the big city skylines look glitzy and amazing and high-tech. When you get down to street level, everything is grungy. There's a sense of getting sort of back-alley tech implants done, you know, going to a dodgy place down a side street and getting someone who you don't really know to install robot eyes for you, things like that.
Which is a little bit like sideloading apps on an Android phone.
Yeah, right, exactly. But yeah, I mean, the big disappointment of the film really is just that it's not that philosophical or thoughtful, and I think that's what people love about the original. It really is. And this,
it's about identity.
Is it like Americanized cheesy?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. See, this is what I don't like about a lot of American, when they Americanize something, it just becomes cheesy.
Yeah.
So, and like a bit sickly.
It's much more the plot now is Scarlett Johansson is the first of her kind cyborg. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the plot is the conspiracy about how and why she was created and why she is special. And none of that was in the original. It does feel that very westernized sort of, there's got to be something special about our lead that makes them the one and the only person who could solve this problem.
Yeah. It's Manifest Destiny, isn't it?
Exactly.
That comes in every American film. While we're talking about westernization, we have to talk about race a little bit. It's been controversial, I think, that...
Very controversial.
...that a Caucasian woman
has
taken
so
the lead.
It's in a funny place. And I mean, the controversy obviously is, a Caucasian lead in a very Japanese property. Actually, the creator of the manga and anime has said he has no problem with it because he sees it, as like I said, this is an entirely built cyborg body. So it could be of any ethnicity. But it's still awkward that she's white. Her main partner is played by a white guy. The scientist who created her is white. The head of the company that created her is white. The only major...
So they all just happen to have chosen a white person body.
Well, the others are all just... Oh, they're just all... Yeah, she's the only one who's created a body. There is one prominent Asian character who's Scarlett Johansson's boss, basically, who's great and speaks exclusively in Japanese, even though everyone else speaks to him in English. But other than that, Asian actors are basically relegated to being all the extras. So you can tell it's set somewhere in Asia because everyone on the streets are Asian, but it's then weird that all of the leads are white.
Not the first time in Hollywood at all,
but it's a very prominent one. The really awkward thing about it is they do directly address it within the plot, and I don't want to spoil it, but they really head-on address the plot reasons they decided to cast a white actress, and people are going to hate it. Absolutely hate it.
Good, good, good. I did hear, and I think this has been confirmed, that for a while they were experimenting with CGI that would make her look Asian.
Well, so yeah, the rumour was, this was very early in production, that they were experimenting with CGI effects to make Scarlett Johansson look more Asian. They've denied it. They admitted they were looking at that kind of tech, but they were looking at it purely for background characters and extras. They never looked at it for Scarlett Johansson, they say. Why they felt they should invest in that kind of tech rather than just cast Asian extras, which is what they ended up doing, I have no idea. Which is the kind of thing that makes you think, are they lying? Because why would you ever bother with that tech for extras? It makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, this reminds me of the adaptation of Cloud Atlas, which is very icky on that stuff.
I've heard bad things.
Yeah, I mean, I've not read the book, so I don't know how faithful it is. But yeah, they had a lot of. They wanted to keep the same actors in multiple sort of timelines, sort of thing. And in some of them, they were all Japanese, but they still had the same actor, so they had to put the little. You know, like Roger Moore in.
Sean Connery, you mean?
Yes, in James Bond, anyway, where he's trying to look Asian. Anyway, it sounds a bit rubbish.
It's just a bit. It's kind of what everyone feared, which is just, it's a slightly flat remake. And it's in that awkward position where it's hard to know who to recommend it to, because if you've seen the original before, you're just going to be disappointed. And if you haven't seen the original, go watch that instead. It's a really good film. I went home and watched it immediately after seeing the press screening for the new one and just sat there thinking, this is so much better.
I'm going to go away and see that. We should stop there. So we go around one more time with a question. And the question is, the ghost with the most, or pew, what a bad shell. Does that work? Dom.
I don't really want to say it, but phew, what a bad shell.
This is the best thing about hosting this, is that I can make people say my puns. Cam.
That first one again, please.
The ghost with the most. You're saying the ghost with the most?
The ghost with the most, only because it looks visually stunning, and I'm a bit of a man for that. Sometimes I can just take away my, you know, the story completely and just sit down and watch something. Just
you like things that look nice?
Just sometimes, yeah.
Watch it in mute or something.
That's it.
And Chris?
Yeah, a few, what a bad shell. This is why I watch Studio Ghibli films with subtitles.
Oh, you're such a... Oh.
What?
You're so... I watch Studio Ghibli films. Anyway, they are
doesn't
good,
everyone?
I know, I just thought you'd been a bit la-di-da. Anyway, thank you, everyone, and thank you at home for listening to this edition of the UK Tech Weekly podcast. Feel free to get in touch with us. You can tweet us using the handle at UK Tech Podcast, or email us on editor@idg.co.uk. And remember, you can find us on Acast, iTunes, SoundCloud, and all other podcast sources of that sort. Don't forget to subscribe, comment, like us, and tell your friends. We'll be back next week with more informed opinion on the hottest topics in tech. Until then, say goodbye, guys.
Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win. And also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.